From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in just a couple of weeks. On October 1st, the age of criminal responsibility in New York State will be raised from 16 years old to 17 years old. Then on October 1st of 2019, the age of criminal responsibility will go to 18, like much of the rest of the country. It's the result of a long debate in criminal justice circles. Should we hold a 16 or 17-year-old accountable the same way we would hold an adult accountable? Or should we recognize the ongoing development in a young person's brain and offer a chance at rehabilitation apart from the harsh confines of adult incarceration? Now, Raise the Age was a successful campaign in this state, and it's now being invoked in the debate over Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh. You know by now that a former classmate of Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford, alleges that Kavanaugh held her down and sexually assaulted her at a party 35 years ago. Kavanaugh has denied that allegation. But some of his supporters are arguing that, well, even if he did it, can we derail his career all these years later over something that happened when he was a teenager? Barry Weiss of the New York Times made the same point. Even if he did it, is that enough to deny him a seat on the Supreme Court? And then there's the debate over whether it's inconsistent to advocate raising the age of criminal responsibility to 18 and also seeking to block Kavanaugh's nomination over something he might have done when he was 17. A lawyer from the Reagan administration wrote on Twitter, quote, "The Venn diagram between folks finding Kavanaugh charges disqualifying and raise the age advocates seeking to wipe the slate clean for serious crimes is a perfect circle," end quote. Conservative writer David French sees it a bit differently. He calls out some of his own side, writing, quote, "Law and order conservatives have long advocated trying older teens as adults if the crime is serious enough. That's a serious position worth considering. Yet now I'm seeing law and order types all over Twitter using a version of the, well, Brett Kavanaugh was just young and stupid defense that they often hate when it's used elsewhere," end quote. This hour, a conversation about the allegations and whether there is space to support raising the age and also to support some form of sanctions against Brett Kavanaugh if he did what is alleged. My guests include Elaine Spall, a member of Rochester City Council and director of the Center for Youth. Always nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you.
Michael Toome is a member of the ROC Act Criminal Justice Task Force, as well as that task force's subgroup on Raise the Age. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Paul Simonelli is, among other things, counsel to the Monroe County Sheriff's Office. And Paul, it's nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
The only attorney in the room here, Paul.
Well, that's actually not true, my friend.
Yeah. That's not true, Elaine.
I am bar approved.
Get on that microphone.
Get on that microphone, yes. I'm out of order. But I had to clarify that because my listeners are going to say, wait, did she get disbarred?
I'm sorry about that.
I'm not disbarred.
Not practicing, but an attorney.
A trained attorney.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. And the reason I bring that up with Paul is I've been in contact with a number of attorneys in town. By and large, I'm going to make a generalization. No matter the political background of attorneys, they see more nuance in the Kavanaugh situation than most non-attorneys. These conversations have been going on privately. I've reached out to a number of attorneys. I spoke to an attorney who is describes himself as a hardcore Democrat, but who also says that he thinks that Brett Kavanaugh should not be blocked here, but did not get cleared by the firm to come on. So eventually I called Paul and I said, you got to come on. And Paul said, okay. Yeah. So here you are. So thanks, by the way.
Well, thank you. And I bring three sides to this perspective. I started out as a prosecutor. I've defended folks. And now I'm intimately involved with what's going on at the Monroe County Jail and getting ready for Raise the Age here in New York. So I think I bring a pretty good perspective to this.
Do you see any inconsistency with people who have advocated raising the age of criminal responsibility who are now also saying Kavanaugh should be blocked for what he might have done when he was 17?
I don't think there's any relationship between the two. I really don't.
Interesting. Okay.
What a child does, what a teenager does, has nothing to do with qualifications for the Supreme Court. It's interesting. The United States Constitution doesn't set any requirements for the United States Supreme Court. So the only requirements are those which we impose on ourselves for that. But I could see people being completely what you might consider inconsistent in their belief about wanting to raise the age and then also, either not supporting or not supporting him for the Supreme Court.
Okay. Now, Michael, you made it clear right off the bat when we started communication that in general here, and this may be the only place of the hour that you agree with Paul, I don't know, but you agree that there that we shouldn't be conflating the debate about what's going on with Brett Kavanaugh and the raise the age.
Absolutely. I think we have to go back to the idea of criminal responsibility versus personal responsibility. I mean, for Kavanaugh, that to me, that's the issue, and it's one of character and what can be understood about that in interviewing him and his accusers. And criminal responsibility, raise the age, is a comprehensive set of criminal justice reforms across the whole gamut of services. I mean, Elaine is at ground zero of this, and so is Paul. I mean, they know what we're really talking about is dealing with this kind of culture of never-ending punitive actions against young people who have been accused of crimes and trying to divert them from the idea of this school-to-prison pipeline where they are sent into an environment where they become hardened criminals. I mean, all of the benefits of Raise the A's actually are community benefits because of these restorative practices. And, you know, there are – I'm just a bystander, actually. I mean, to professionals like Elaine or Jen Perry at the Hillside Center or the co-chairs of my committee, such as Betty Hancock and Kathleen Fitzpatrick, they've all had involvement with youth. And we don't ever talk about whose political party people are on. And I know, and I can cite you in examples, and hopefully I will get a chance to, of how conservative Republicans support the basic concepts of restorative and diversionary actions on the behalf of our youth.
Okay.
How this relates to Brett Kavanaugh, that's a whole nother debate that's embedded in the moment of the day, which is Me Too.
So, Michael, take it head on. Take this attorney from the Reagan administration who's saying that he is seeing inconsistency, that when you say we should raise the age, we should not seek to hammer someone for what they did when they're 17, and now Brett Kavanaugh, if he did that, he's out.
No one is saying, for example, in Raise the Age, that there isn't criminal responsibility in the terms of violent crimes, for one thing. No one is saying that people shouldn't be punished or they shouldn't actually eventually have their repentance rewarded. And in that respect, and nobody is saying that the actual record of their offenses, you know, is something that we should not ever consider. Now, Brett Kavanaugh has not been convicted of a crime. Raise the Age is about people who are going to be convicted of crimes. How are those two related? I say it's a difference between criminal responsibility and personal responsibility. Personal responsibility, there is a debate here on how far you can go back into a past to evaluate a person's character. Well, one of the things you would hope is that you do see an act of contrition if somebody did participate in some of these things. So as an alternative, the only thing you can hope for is to be able to make the decision between an accuser and the accused and say, where is the veracity here? What else can I say? I don't know enough about the circumstances except that Kavanaugh's accuser has a very devastating account across time, and it relates very much to how the Me Too movement has really changed the American narrative. I mean, you know, this thing's like systemic misogyny, systemic racism. People of color have lived systemic racism every day of their life. Women have lived within the shadow of a systemic misogyny every day of their life. Frankly, it's only us white guys who are only getting the fact that this has been going on, right? I mean, I can map that to my own awareness, and maybe sometime we'll have time to talk about that.
All right, we'll have a lot of time to discuss these things.
Can you see me smiling? I mean, do we love Michael? So here's the thing. So many issues, Michael. Listen, it's so tempting to, in the middle of this conversation, and again, one of the most important facts that we have to face around the Supreme Court is who's going to be there. This is essentially important. When you are running for elected office, I will say this as an 11-year veteran of city council, people watch every move I make, and I'm okay with it. I'm wearing jeans. You can't see me. it's okay, you know. Or you are always watching, and some people will want to say things to you. Put yourself out there as a nominee for the highest court in this country. Louise Slaughter, who we still love and admire, said, I want judges who go to sleep with the Constitution under their pillow. We are not just talking about any old office. We're talking about a high office. So I get that it's very tempting to bring into this very serious debate the issue of raise the age. It's a different conversation. Brett Kavanaugh, and I don't know him, and everything that's going on is alleged. We've got to say that as a lawyer, one of the things Paul and I learned is to be careful about facts, be careful about language. I practiced corporate tax law for years, taught at the law school for years. So we have to be very, very careful about what we accuse people of. People say, well, is he lying? I have no idea, and I would never accuse somebody of lying. So it's alleged. I do know this. It's very, very rare for a young woman, a woman, to people think that people make accusations easily. They don't. She's in every newspaper all over the place. No. You do not tell your husband, your therapist, years ago, when you are not in the middle of a Supreme Court debate, that this happened. These are not the kinds of things that people decide they're going to come out on. So whether you believe her or not, that's another story. We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh as an adult man, not a 17-year-old. I think that it makes sense for us to say, in terms of what Michael was saying, is there now a personal responsibility to say, I was a young person who partied a lot, self-proclaimed member of the Keg Club, and I did these things, and I may have been involved with things. I don't know. But now we're dealing with a whole nother conversation. The raise the age issues have to do with exactly what Michael said. We want to slow a system down. We want to look at people who are 16 and 17-year-old and say, your mind, your brain, your circumstances, your intentions are not fully developed. And 48 other states have done it and done it well. And it's time for us. Paul and I both have been spending months and months and months. I spent 15 months on the governor's task force in the last 10 months working with Judge Doran, working with Todd Baxter, being so careful about how we're going to implement this October 1st. No one's getting a free pass. No one's saying it doesn't matter if you're 16. No one's saying, by the way, as Michael said, we're not talking about violent felonies. We're talking about misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies. And what we're talking about is finally getting justice for young people who do things that probably anybody might have done at any point in their life and been arrested and put into jail and treated in an adult system. We have to have parental notification. That doesn't mean you don't have a consequence. You may end up in probation. Doesn't mean you don't have a consequence. So I think that it's very tempting, and I certainly can understand wanting to bring in the raise the age and the Kavanaugh in the same conversation. I don't think they're aligned at all, but I appreciate how people are trying to make that happen. People jump on a bandwagon. Our president said something like, Brett Kavanaugh doesn't deserve this. Well, you put yourself out there. When you put yourself out there as a public official, I know some wonderful people, maybe some people in this room, who will never run for office because they don't want the scrutiny. And not that any of you guys have, and Michael's raising his hand, that you have anything to be ashamed of, but, it is a big deal. You need Supreme Court justices who are so far above any kind of suspicion. I would feel much better personally if Brett Kavanaugh said, you know what? I wish at 17 I had the consciousness I have now, and I may have done some things. And guess how much we forgive? We do. We move forward. But to say I didn't, I don't remember, I don't know, but to completely deny this is really difficult, I think. But again, Evan, you're trying so hard, and I think you've got wonderful material here, but I think it's a different conversation.
Okay, let me read one email, because I think at least we've got agreement from our guests on separating these issues. Raise the age is not related necessarily to Brett Kavanaugh. Here's an email from a listener named Alan, who heard our tease this morning and sent me this email. said, Evan, doesn't it just come down to this? We will never fully know. We will never have definitive evidence. And therefore, if we want to convict a man based on unverifiable allegations, we're going to put a lot of people at risk over what they did when they were in high school. And that's why I think it is, in fact, inconsistent to be in favor of raising the age while also trying to nail this guy. That's from a listener named Alan.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
You know, and again, I think it's very tempting to try to bring these two together. Yeah. Why? But we're talking about Brett Kavanaugh as an adult man. He's now making adult decisions.
I would also say to Alan, we're not trying, there's no we, but whoever is involved is not trying to convict anybody. This
right.
is not, it's not
no.
a trial.
Exactly. No, we're,
this is a confirmation
and we're
here.
Saying alleged because we don't know. And you know what, Alan? I spent many years as a dean of students at RIT in one of my lives. I you know, people think I can't hold a job, but I think I'm okay. 17 years at RIT and then law school, and we know that these kinds of situations where there is often a memory lapse or alcohol yeah. involved, I mean, that's
both
what
parts.
Happens
on both parts.
On both parts. And yeah. so we don't know. Those of us sitting here don't know. But and maybe Justice Kavanaugh really doesn't remember. I think it's okay to say, I don't remember. And if I did something I shouldn't yeah. have done, I'm deeply sorry. You know, we do a lot of restorative practice. What does restorative practice mean? It means you look at the person across the table and you say to them, if I harmed you, I'm sorry, and let's talk about how that, and you move on. Now, you're talking about attempted rape. So it's not just simple, I stole your bike, or, right. you know, like I took earbuds from, you know, Walmart, and I want to make it right. We know, and again, Paul and I have been spending months and months and months and months with probation. We're hoping that some of our 16-year-olds will be completely diverted into teen court. And, you know, teen court is an opportunity to try and start over and really deal with what you did and why you did it. So, you know, no one's saying that Justice Kavanaugh needs to go into rehab for drinking. No one's saying, I mean, yeah. I don't know what happened.
Right. And no one is convicting him either.
No one is convicting him.
I mean,
they're raising the question.
We're talking about criminal behavior versus, you know, an issue of character here. Everybody interprets it that way. No one is saying, I mean, I don't even know what the statute of limitations is in whatever state he was raised. I mean, that definitely comes into play whether it's even a crime or not. Considered that. I mean, but this is, again, to me, part of this culture of false equivalency, which reduces the complexity of every issue by this bipartisan filter. And my first reaction was to go back and remind myself of how many people that, you know, you can view me as a journeyman through all these issues, where I meet people right at ground zero, like Elaine and some of the other people I've mentioned, people who walk the walk in terms of social services and just don't talk the talk. I mean, it was actually one episode with Elaine that led me to become an activist. I can say my mind is blown by people like Moses Robinson, or I mean, who put together a whole conference based on police and justices becoming aware of trauma-informed policing and justice, right? Of recognizing the transgenerational trauma across communities of color that comes down and is part of the whole issue of mass incarceration. And the fact that we cannot deal with crime unless we understand that we have destroyed the communities in which it occurs the worst. Right?
But let me turn to Paul Simonelli here. From here on forward, I think we can probably separate raise the age as an issue in Kavanaugh. But there's legal questions on Kavanaugh, because I hear mm-hmm. Michael saying this is about not necessarily about criminal response, but it's about personal responsibility here. It's about personal character. If Brett Kavanaugh is going to say for the rest of his life, I didn't do this, then we're not going to have the resolution that some people are looking for. And we're not going to have video from that room, and we're not going to have the kind of evidence that would cinch this, even though we know that, you know, statistically not a whole lot of people make up allegations like this. We're not going to have it, right, Paul? I mean, this thing is going to be sort of unreconcilable.
It is. It is. And so, you know, you have a couple of options. Either you measure, you have an allegation that can't be substantiated, that until this summer didn't involve him specifically being named as the potential perpetrator, and you have a professional career of 35 years where it appears that every single person that has had contact with him in his entire professional life, women, men, anybody, have nothing but praise for how he has treated the people, not only professionally for his work product, but also how he's gone the extra miles in supporting all those folks that have worked with him or for him, including, you know, all the female law clerks that were standing behind him and saying that, you know, he still takes an interest in my career, and even though I'm not working for him anymore, and he's always the go-to person when I have questions. So it is a Wayne thing. You are actually absolutely right. Certain people are not going to be satisfied because I'm not sure what their goal is, whether to derail his nomination or to get to the bottom of this situation. So I think there's probably going to be a large number of people, given the way everything is split down the middle and you're either on one side or the other, that are never going to be satisfied no matter what happens.
Now, and I know Michael and Elaine want to jump in, but let me stay with Paul for 1 second on this, because I think then it becomes incumbent upon us to do our best to try to take partisanship out of this. Really try hard to do that. Because if our listeners...
Both issues.
Exactly. If you're a listener who was rooting against this nomination, you got to try to take that rooting interest away here. If you're a listener who was rooting for Brett Kavanaugh to be confirmed, you got to try to take that out of this and ask yourself, what is the likelihood that this was fabricated? But then there's another layer to this.
Yeah.
I think that there's space for someone to say, I think he did it. I'm not sure it should derail the nomination because of the lack of corroboration in terms of actual evidence, just because I'm worried that in the future, does that incentivize other allegations, while recognizing how rare that is. I mean, this is actually all pretty layered here. And so, Paul, I guess I want to ask you, were you rooting for Kavanaugh's nomination? Did you want him to go through?
Sure.
Okay. Do you think he did it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sitting in judgment of him. I mean, if I was a hearing examiner sitting there.
I understand
there,
that, but you've also listened to everything.
But
you've read
everything. I think I gave you my rationale. I'm looking at one person, no specificity until his name surfaced, and I understand how that might happen, but one person, and then I'm looking at, you know, statements from hundreds of women about how he has acted.
We're going to get to that. I'm not sure that's exculpatory. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying it's exculpatory.
But are those even in conflict?
And for the second half of what you said, an action of a 16 or 17 year old, should that be a disqualifier, whatever it is? Are there certain actions that should be disqualifiers from future public service in whatever position, the highest position? I mean, we had Ted Kennedy run for president after what he did at Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
And he came close, and he came very close.
Ted Kennedy was never held to account for the death of that woman. And the man who made the film about it is a liberal from Pittsburgh, and everyone should watch that. That's true.
Right.
But that doesn't excuse not holding other people.
No, I understand, but I'm saying, so, you know, I see a tremendous double standard sometimes in when we decide to go after. Right now, there's a very high-powered Democratic official, I think from Michigan or someplace, that someone from his own circle of people made accusations that's being completely ignored, and he's running for public office.
So double standards, yes. So, but let's scrape that away.
Right.
Let's look at Kavanaugh. I'm going to do this a different way here, Counselor, because Senator, you're dodging the question. if it turns out, if he eventually says this next week, you know what? I want to put everything on the table. I did this. I was young and stupid. I'd like to apologize and move on with my life. Should he be confirmed?
Not after saying he didn't do it, no.
Okay.
But if that were in fact the case,
I
was one of the senators that had to vote for him,
okay,
I would vote for him based on his professional career.
But this lie would be enough to disqualify.
Yeah, you know, let me just offer a thought, too. You know, one of the
things we're
concerned about is the kind of policy changes and the kind of voting he may have on certain issues that may impact women. And I think we can't help but bring into the conversation the fact that there is always this fear of overturning Roe v. Wade. And I think that we know that it makes us a little bit more sensitive when it's a sex crime, a crime that has sexual in nature. I don't know why, but I think as women sometimes we're saying, oh my goodness, is he secretly or quietly, you know, that guy? And so is he going to bring to the table, although we've heard, you know, Roe v. Wade is off the table, it's not going to be overturned.
It's not off the table. It's going to be overturned whether he's on the court or not, I think.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
Amy Coney Barrett's going to vote to overturn it.
I know, you know, I don't know, but yes, but obviously that's a fear.
I don't mean to be flippant here.
No,
I'm saying that derailing Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court doesn't save Roe v. Wade.
I don't agree with you.
I think what I'm trying to say is that there may be an escalated fear about Kavanaugh because of some of the policy and some of the procedures he might be very influenced on. So we can't just put it aside. You know, I think that Paul is absolutely right. It's the lie, it's perhaps the lack of transparency. I don't know if it's a lie. I would just say it's a lack of transparency. If he came back now and said, you know what, I did lie, that's a serious problem for us.
Yeah. That's
Michael's issue around character. When you apologize for something, when you say, you know what, I'm sitting here, I was 17, I drank an enormous, not me, Kavanaugh, I drank an enormous amount in prep school. I was in this sort of insulated, sort of white tower environment where you could do these things and nobody knew. And, you know, I wasn't a kid on the street or some of the kids I deal with who crossing the street would get arrested. When selling a single cigarette can get arrested. We're talking about a very different situation. But so let's go back to Kavanaugh, because I think we've made the distinction with Raise the Age.
Yeah.
So he's in this kind of ivory tower, white castle kind of place, and he does something, and he seriously, honestly doesn't remember. And then says to himself and to others, there were many times when I woke up the morning after and found myself in like an unknown situation. So I guess it's possible. And if it happened, I'm so deeply sorry, and I need to really make it right. If I can, let's talk about that. Instead of saying, I think what he's, again, allegedly saying, he wasn't even there. And his guy friend is saying he wasn't there. And so, you know, that's what's hard to really live with and to accept. A lie and an inability. Again, he's an adult now. What happened at 17, we're talking about today as a justice, as a person who is about to make policy and procedures that are going to impact the lives of all of us, who is not able to really face up to maybe there's a consequence. That's the issue for most people right now.
Yeah, that's interesting, Elaine. So, but Michael, I'm going to bring in a second, but back to Paul here. What if, I want to take Elaine's contention that it's possible when you get blackout drunk a lot, and Mark Judge obviously wrote books about it, and according to Judge's books, his best friend Brett Kavanaugh also got blackout drunk. Is it really believable that he would know for certain that he never did something like this if he was blackout drunk a number of times?
Probably not.
Yeah, couldn't he just say, my goodness, what this woman is saying, I cannot imagine myself doing. I did get blackout drunk a number of times.
They'd say, well, he knew he did, and he's just using that being drunk now as an excuse. In the court of public opinion,
there's no nuance.
Listen, when you get accused of something at that level that you can never be proved one way or the other, it's absolutely same thing. You know, I listened to Clarence Thomas's closing statement to the Senate
in 1991.
And thank God he had the courage to come out and say what he said. You know, about that entire committee, and you wanted to talk about racism and everything else. Listen to that. Listen to his statement.
I like to talk about systemic misogyny in that case.
And systemic racism, if you want to talk about it. But once you're accused of something, there's absolutely...
You're saying he has to lie then?
No, I'm not saying he has to lie. I'm saying if he doesn't know for sure that he did it, if he has no recollection of it...
He should say he didn't.
Then he should say he didn't.
That's not true then.
If he has absolutely no recollection of doing something, and
he got blackout drunk at parties a lot.
There's a nexus between being blackout drunk and sexually assaulting a woman.
No.
When you're accused.
I have to say, when I went to college, there was definitely that nexus.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get blackout drunks, but I went to plenty of fraternity parties. and unfortunately stayed silent while I saw the similar behavior, or other people brag about it at least. So, you know, it's not beyond the possibilities here. And even if he did it or just blacked out and forgot, it doesn't change one of the testimonies on his behalf, Paul, that you brought up. They all exist and they all should be accounted for. But the question is, what about the victim here? I mean, you said that this wasn't an accusation until this summer. No. I mean, in 2012, she talked to her husband. She named this. If you know anything about
therapist and her therapist, right. and her therapist.
Didn't name right. him. Named and, four.
She made it no. pretty clear who it was probably at the time. You look back,
right.
A prominent judge or I don't have the exact language, but
a prominent
look,
judge
I think
that
it's
she
believable.
Went to, that she went to prep school with.
Yeah, I think
so
it's believable.
Well, she didn't go to school with him. He went to an all boys school. Yeah.
No, but I mean, she was involved.
No, she describes that whole thing of how social interaction between those schools.
You're
right.
Yeah.
I mean, does he deny knowing her? I don't know about that. I mean, has anybody asked him? I think that's something we might find on the next testimony. I mean, if he denies knowing her, and that can be proved. But you know what? I'm not a litigator here, right? What I'm worried about is that awareness that comes from watching the Me Too movement. You know, every single woman in my life has had her Me Too moment. And when you take that out and you extrapolate that to millions and millions of women, well, you know, what comes along with that is that millions and millions of men are responsible for that. That there has been this culture since the beginning of this nation, again, both on the systemic racism and the systemic misogyny thing. But, you know, but when it comes to women, right, we have downplayed everything that's been happening in their lives. And everything that she says lines up with the idea of a traumatic episode that can affect a person across a lifetime. And she herself tried to remain anonymous because she knew what would happen, because what is happening. Her life is being destroyed. She's forced to move. She faces death threats. Now, Kavanaugh, he's going to face a career moment regardless here, but he goes back to a pretty nice position in terms of judicial authority if you know, he is not approved under this cloud, right? That cloud that still is around Clarence Thomas, unfortunately, please. So the issue here is really, why don't we take women more seriously, and why did we spend most of our history avoiding that?
Yeah, and so I want to hit that point, but we're going to get to John's phone call in a second. Listeners, if you want to weigh in, we can take your comments as well. I think the question of taking women seriously, Michael, that's the way you phrased it. Why haven't we taken women seriously? I want to put sort of a fine point on this because I've been watching the reporting of Ronan Farrow over the last year. It's almost exactly a year since Farrow and the New Yorker and the New York Times broke the Harvey Weinstein stories. And Ronan Farrow consistently says, it's not just believe women, and it's not don't believe women, and it's not believe men or don't believe men. It's take women seriously,
right.
Respect women, and fully investigate claims. It isn't just, oh, here's a claim, I'm going to read it, I believe it, now what do we do next? It's, here's a claim, I'm going to respect the person who made this claim, and I'm going to vet it and investigate as fully as I can. If you read his story that he wrote about Christine Blasey Ford before she named herself in the Washington Post, it's clear there's not a whole lot of corroboration. Now, the Washington Post story included the therapist notes, which is very different. And that's the first kind of corroboration that we get. Maybe we get more, but Farrow's pretty thorough. We may have to deal with a whole lot of corroboration. And Paul, I want to ask you if you agree with Michael Toome, who says every woman in his life has had a Me Too moment, and that men have to be held accountable, and that men have not been held accountable by and large for this. Do you agree with that?
Well, let's dissect that a little bit. I don't know if every woman, I'm not going to generalize about anything. And, you know, I was thinking about something when he was saying that men have to account for this too. A few years ago, I got invited to a golf tournament. I'll make this as quick as possible. Myself and a friend of mine, we got to the golf tournament. It was out at Blue Heron, and I didn't even know what the golf tournament was for. So we had a wonderful round of golf, went into the dinner, and they're giving away prizes. Then all of a sudden, they passed these cards out to everybody, and they wanted everybody in the room to get up and take this oath that they would never beat their wife. Apparently, it was a fundraiser.
That's a classic question. When did you stop beating your wife?
No, you know, it was a fundraiser for an organization. It was a fundraiser for an organization that supported women that had been abused by their husbands. And honest to God, I didn't know what you know, it was just one of those last minute things. Hey, I got a couple of places, and we went and did. And so, I'm not of the belief that I believe in dealing with individuals that do something wrong. And so when we start generalizing and say all men are pigs or something else like that, I won't live by that premise. When we say there's institutional anything, you know, I've been on here before and we've talked about other things. I just think I'll be the first one to stand in line with you and protest and fight against someone who we can identify that does something. But I'm also very cautious whenever we start saying, so we say, you know, every man knows this, every woman's been had that.
Let's
moment.
Take every out. Okay.
I said every woman in my life. It doesn't apply to every woman.
But Michael, let's honor Paul's point there and let's take the word every out. And let me just ask you, generally, have women been sort of dismissed in their claims often? So women who make claims of assault, allegations of rape and all kinds of related crimes, ostensible crimes, have they been dismissed too easily over the years?
I'm just not going to generalize like that.
I mean, I think the answer has got to be yes.
But it's not just women.
I don't mean every allegation is exactly true.
Sexual abuse goes beyond just a woman versus man.
But let me offer a context.
But I just don't see how it's not yes, Paul.
Yeah, well, that's his opinion. And
I don't understand that. Yeah. I honestly don't understand it. I'm not saying, again, that every man is bad or every man, but like that's...
I want to add that I went to the doctor yesterday, and one of the things they asked me was to confirm all of my medications, and the second was a question, are you being abused at home?
Yeah, they have to ask that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, so as a general question that's asked of everybody, and that's not, you know, what can I say? I said no. You know, it's a larger issue here. It's a larger issue about sexual abuse. Because, you know, in my life, I have known men who, in very private conversations late at night, as a code monkey, on the computer and stuff, getting to know people where they have confided, and it's a dark secret from their past as a young person. Say they went on a Boy Scout trip, and some things happened were inappropriate, and they have questioned themselves and their own guilt. Right? I mean, so it's men on men, it's women on men, it's women on women. But the biggest and most occurring is obviously men and women. And I don't see how anybody
Let's just take this. So you know, again, I spent years as a dean of students at a university, a fine university, and they're no different, in fact, probably better than most. The young men who are involved at 17, 18, 19 on Saturday night are not the same guys who show up Monday morning for the disciplinary hearing, let me assure you. They are so cleaned up and they are so remorseful and they're really not even sure what happened. So now, I will also tell you that we've seen more and more and more conversation and understanding about the culture of some of this. And some of the culture is exactly what the Keg Club or others. So, you know, do we take a Brett Kavanaugh and his buddy out and say they were unusual? Probably not. And that's what I think people are asking you to, Paul, to identify, and I'm not going to force you to say anything, but Evan might. But, you know, it is absolutely true, and I'm certainly, again, I'm a lawyer, so I'm not going to say it's a fact, but all of us, and I will say myself included, have moments in your life when you wish that you had kicked somebody or slapped them or pushed them away or said, I don't think so, as young women, so, and even as grown women. So, especially if you're as cute as I am, you can imagine. So, I'm just teasing, Evan.
Don't
even do that. No, and it has nothing. No, and by the way, it has nothing to do with the way you look. I should not have said that because I'm making it a joke.
Everyone
and it's
is
not,
beautiful.
And it's not a joke.
We can have a program
this
about
is,
that.
This is not a joke, and this is very, very true. And some of the most vulnerable young people I work with, traffic young women, women who have no other alternatives, women who are involved in being so needy and wanting so much support, find themselves at the risk of often men and sometimes women. So when you black out, and again, I'm not saying he did, I'm not saying that he did in this case, but he self-proclaimed a member of a club that drank an enormous amount and didn't remember a lot of what happened. So it's impossible for him, and Paul, I'm going to say, I think you do have to agree with this, it's impossible for him to say it didn't happen. He's not saying it did happen, but it's impossible, Evan, to agree with you, for him to say it didn't happen because he simply can't remember. And right. that's what this man should be saying.
He's saying,
and
I
that's
can't
all
remember.
That's all we really can be satisfied with. We can't force him to admit something he doesn't think he did or remember right. he did. But he can say, I don't know.
But you know, right? he would
but
he
Paul's
would never...
point is that politically it becomes a cinch. That he's toast if he does that.
Well, what's
and,
the point?
And I want to be an idealist who say, just okay. be honest. But what Paul's saying is, if he's honest in that way, the forces of politics throw him out.
Well, now.
Well, that says a lot about
well,
politics
now,
and honesty, doesn't
it? Of course it does.
But that, I mean, has to that, do with, that, that has to do with the fact that he's covered up or denied or, you know, been, you know, blatantly saying I didn't.
And no, then, I'm saying even if he had done that right from the very
oh,
beginning.
We have a president who, you know, who said in response to 19 women's accusations that all of them were liars. Now, what did that do to his career? He also continues to attack the Central Park Five, right? And as for their execution, even though they've been exonerated as innocent, how did that play out in the way that his
all
career
right.
is going?
I got to grab the floor here because I realize I'm way late for the only break that we got to take. And it's about 30 seconds long, and we're going to come back to a phone call. But let me just kind of say this to Paul and Elaine's contention on Elaine saying, at very least, Brett Kavanaugh could admit, I drank to being blackout drunk many times. I don't recall doing this. If this woman is certain it happened, I want to find a way to try to make it right, but I certainly don't think I'm the kind of guy who would ever do that.
Right.
If he could say that,
right.
you'd feel satisfied. But we do have a system because that is so partisan that Paul, I don't think, is incorrect to say he's gone if he does that. And...
Well,
you know,
be.
So anyway.
Well, maybe he should be.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But,
okay.
you know, to lie about it is certainly not the answer
yeah.
for a Supreme Court justice
nominee.
I think
everybody should just be honest. But
be anyway. Honest.
But I understand,
exactly.
I understand all the points that are being made. Let's get that only break. We're right back. We'll take some phone calls and comments as well next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, the Eastman School is bringing in experts this weekend to talk about the future of classical music, and we unpack it in our first hour. In the second hour, a woman from Yugoslavia comes to the United States in the 1990s, escaping war in her homeland and finding consumerism and complacency here. Her brilliant book and her stories in our second hour. I think I'm just going to give Paul and Elaine like the next 2 hours. I'm just going to record their conversation. We'll post the podcast later.
I actually
Can I be the referee?
Absolutely that.
Unbiased
I actually like
referee.
Paul and his family very much, so it's not personal, of course.
Of course it isn't personal.
No, of course it isn't.
And I bring folks here because I think that we're going to have a conversation in good faith, and that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
This is John in Rochester first. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead, John.
Hi, thank you. If this doesn't happen to be true, then this won't apply to Judge Kavanaugh. But it seems to be just another example of how our society has let people like Bill Cosby, like Larry Nassar, like Chris Collins, like Ken Lay, like Paul Manafort, all sorts of different people in similar type positions get away with certain things, and they come to believe that they can live by this double standard, that they can seem like they disapprove of things in public, but in their own lives, they don't believe that these things should apply to them. They don't believe when they do it, it's wrong because they think they're different. They can, again, in public, seem like they generally disapprove of it, but in their own lives, they really don't believe that what they did was wrong, and their instant reaction is to immediately totally deny it. A lot of people like this, that's their first reaction. They say, I didn't do it. They flat out deny it, and it turns out that it's true. And again, I don't know what's going on with the judge, but it's so similar, and it's just people around them don't want it to be true, or it's in their best interest not to have it be true. And they let them get away with these things for decades, and usually it's not an isolated incident. Usually it's not they only do things once. It just happens again and again, and I just think that until... as a society, we don't condone it. We don't let them get away with it. It's just going to keep on happening.
Yeah, Bill Clinton did not have sexual relations with that woman. Chris Collins did not engage in insider trading. I mean, the list. There's a long list.
Well, can I say something about Bill Clinton? You know, I have to say at the time that I took that as a personal issue, but with the changing narrative in our country and how it connects to the whole timeline, Now I look at it and I say, now, wait a minute. That was abuse of power and using sex within it.
Of course it was.
Know? I mean, this is important, right? And it's part of that whole Me Too awareness that I personally am still going through. And again, I think there's a lot of women
which shouldn't be partisan is what you're saying here, right? It cannot be partisan.
Look, I don't think most policies should be partisan. You know, I'm talking from the perspective of somebody who was a registered Republican for the first 13 years in his life, right? I remember a time when I, as a liberal, would have many conversations with conservatives, and my goodness, it was about policy. And then it was about who would buy the next round, and then we would move on to sports, right? But today, everything is not only partisan, but it's a personality cult. I mean, so if we're talking the 1980s, you would see agreement on policy again and again in congressional matters. I mean, the issues were foremost than the personalities. And, you know, I have perspective on how they changed. But this is detrimental to the whole idea of what America is about. And today we are talking about issues about who is even included in America as being relevant. And women and people of color are just getting there, I'm afraid.
You know, I think one of the questions, Evan, and you've raised it, and so has John. Thank you, John, for that call. I just did your job a little bit. he's not. He doesn't want me to come. I come back a lot, and he still lets me come back, which is so sweet. But, you know, the question really is very core. Can an elected official, can someone positioned for a high, high visibility position make a mistake, admit the mistake, offer their own sense of retribution, involve themselves in some kind of restorative practice, go forward and survive? And that's really, I think, a real core question, isn't it? It's one you're raising. And I would like to think that as a country, as a people, we could, you know, forgiveness is really, really very essential. So is grace. So is graciousness. So is compassion. And so I would like to see, in this situation of Paul's right, maybe he would have been toast. Is that what you said? He would
have
been toast.
That's what I said, but yeah.
You said he would have been toast. And, you know, I think that we would love to live in a society where people can be forgiven, but I don't know, because I've not been able to follow it enough. I've not been home much lately. But has he shown compassion for what happened? Has he said, you know, I can imagine how difficult this is for the victim if it, you know. I mean, has there been any sense of grace or graciousness or compassion? That's what we're asking our elected officials and all of
us
to be. And if you're held to that standard, then maybe you can survive and maybe you're not toast because you tell the truth.
All right, 20 seconds, Paul. You want to hit that before I grab more quick calls?
No, that's cool. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't think that probably Paul disagrees with that. I mean, grace is a good thing.
I think the basis of the issues of whether they're separate, we all
it shouldn't be partisan. I think everybody agrees with that.
Should not
the role
be partisan.
Of criminal justice, we agree in that too, right? I mean,
there's more agreement than we thought here. All right, so Drew, and let me just hit a couple of phone calls and we'll do them quickly. So keep it tight. Drew in Rochester. Go ahead, Drew.
Hi, thanks, Evan, for taking my call. I just have a question for Mr. Simonelli. I think I'm under the impression that he feels that there's justification for hitting women, because why would he not take a pledge that he would never beat his wife at this golf event that he went to? I mean, I just think, what's wrong with saying I would never beat my wife? Why would he not take that pledge? I don't get it.
Why? Because I was raised not to do that, and I don't need to take a pledge to live by the values that I was raised by.
Okay. Drew, thanks for the call. Randy in Pittsburgh next. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi, I just like to make two points. One, been any information about where or when this attack took place, and yet the first response from Kavanaugh was, I wasn't there.
That's an interesting point.
That's suspicious to me. And number two, it really bothers me that people are accusing him of trying to rip her clothes off when, ergo, he's trying to rip her clothes off to rape her. And let's just not stop at ripping her clothes off, because he went down several levels of clothing. And it was a pretty violent attack. And the attack was supposed to produce a rape. So let's just be honest about what we're talking about here.
Okay.
And I agree with all the grace and forgiveness and all that stuff, too, and I appreciate your saying those things. Thank you.
All right, Randy, thanks.
Thank you, Randy.
Paul, as an attorney, since I don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to hit her first point. If you were to say to me, hey, Evan, did you commit the murder last week? And I said, you mean the one at the train tracks? I was never there. And you go, oh, I never told you it was at the train tracks, man.
I don't think that's what was said.
Okay.
I think that's just what's being played. He's given a very concise statement. I don't think he said, I wasn't there, because he couldn't say that, because he doesn't know where there is.
So you think this is just part of his denial that's being stretched?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, when I was a kid, that was often viewed as the limit of how questioning can go. This exact question, when did you stop beating your wife? And the presumption within that question, how do you answer that? I mean, you have to say, I never started. I mean, there's a certain part of this in all of this retroactive questioning.
Paul, as an attorney who is rooting for this nomination, can we go forward with these kind of nominations in a way that doesn't feel overly partisan?
Sure we can. Sure we can. I think one of the errors that occurred was the Senate changing its rules from, having to have 60 votes rather than a simple majority. I think that was a rule of the Senate that's not constitutionally required, and they changed that. And it just shows how, that we're hanging on by our, by the smallest margin to get things through. That forced consensus. That forced compromise. That's what politics is about, building consensus and compromising. And we've lost that. Everything is black, everything's zero sum. And anybody who's been in politics a long time, if you talk to some of the older folks that are retired now, that wasn't it. There was always compromise. It's you don't always get what you want. I don't always get what I want. But unless it's a life and death issue, you don't have to, every time you have an issue, you don't dig your heels in and say it's yes or no. And we've lost that completely as a society. Unfortunately, someone's always got to be right and someone's got to be wrong.
20 seconds.
Well, we did also push this nomination through when we had a nomination a few years ago that was not pushed through. So, that's another really serious offense, if you ask me, that we have a double standard around when we are pushing somebody through. So, thank you, Evan, for always bringing in important topics, and thank you to the listeners.
Well, I appreciate the conversation here. Our thanks to Lane Spall, member of Rochester City Council. Thank you for being here.
For sure.
Paul Simonelli, counsel to the Monroe County Sheriff's Office. Thank you, Paul. Nice having you as always. Michael Tome, a local activist. I always say Tome.
Now a lot of other people do too.
Michael Tome. Michael, thank you. Nice having you. Thank you very much. Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.